Let's walk the talk.
This is Clemens Mangatella
on 702.
25 minutes before 11 o'clock, you're listening to this live broadcast of the Clement Mangatella Show from Eskom's headquarters. We are at Megawatt Park. We had the electricity minister in the first hour of the show scrutinizing government's energy action plan. How far are they? Is it working? When are we likely to start seeing the benefits of that action plan? And in this hour, we are speaking to Eskom's own experts. These are senior managers here at Eskom. We had Eric earlier on, who is responsible for generation, acting general manager in generation. I want to bring in now Isabel Fick, who's Eskom's general manager for systems operator in the transmission. Am I saying that well?
That's right.
In the transmissions division. Isabel, thank you so much for also coming through. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity.
So is then your responsibility and your team in the transmission division to manage the grid? How does it work? What's your responsibility?
The system operator does a lot of things, which all comes to a head in the control room. And so there's a lot of support, but in the control room itself, yes, we manage the national network and the transmission network per se. And therefore, we are the ones responsible for the balancing the demand and supply in the country.
In other words, load shedding.
That's right.
So point to Isabel.
You've now named me.
Well, so how does it work? How do you manage it? So when you are in that control room, what are you looking at and what's the balancing act?
There's a lot of factors that we look at. It's actually extremely technical. With a lot of moving parts, if you may. But I need to start to tell you, I have an excellent team. We have some of the best in the world, contrary to popular belief. We really do. So there's many factors that we consider. You always have to have a balance between supply and demand, and that will produce a 50 hertz signal throughout the country. It also is a signal that we govern for the rest of Southern Africa. So that is the same part, but there's various factors that feed into that. How many power stations are online? What is the mix of generation at any particular point in time? What emergency reserves do we have available? Where are we standing on the instruments that we use to reduce the demand? What can we do on the supply side? So, and it updates every single second. So it's very dynamic, very live, happening all the time, 24 hours.
So you need eyes on that. I don't know, is there a leaderboard that you're looking at? You need eyes on that every single second?
It looks like NASA, it's what most people tell us. But yes, I have the dedicated teams. I have a control room that is manned 24/7. In fact, we have a number of control rooms throughout the country. But the main one is where we dictate what happens in the country.
Okay.
And then, of course, we also have the telecommunications control rooms which support all of that. And then we disseminate to regional control rooms, which then goes into the lower networks and distribution.
Yeah. So how do you then dictate what happens? So how do you take the decision? In other words, let's be practical. So you are seeing on your systems that there are some units that have broken down, they're out, and you're seeing the demand is increasing. Do you instantly make the decision to, okay, we've got to implement stage 4, stage 6 load shedding, or do you have to make the call to your managers and your bosses before the call is made? Because I imagine you've got to act quickly.
Sometimes you don't have time to act. If there's an instantaneous event on the network, let's say we lose a Medupi unit, which is 800 megawatts, gone. So that's nearly a stage of load shedding. Then normally if that happens, you'll have to act fast to circumvent that. But we do our forecasting. And well, we start 2 years ahead, and then it has different intervals up to the day ahead scheduling, and then even up to a minute scheduling that we do. So we pretty much have a very good comprehension of what is happening on the network before, which is why we can give you a forecast of what we foresee in terms of load shedding for a couple of days. We also know which units are coming off on maintenance. We know which units are expected back that has been off on either faults or maintenance. And so we have our forecasting is also one of the best teams in the world. We have a lot of international compliments as far as that is concerned. So we have a pretty good idea. But in the moment, it can happen that you have a trip and then we don't have the legacy of time to make the call.
Yeah.
So usually we'll be able to make the call. We run the plane on a daily basis and then we make the call. But if we can't do that, if there's an instantaneous event, we will make the call immediately.
Okay.
And asking, do we have to ask other permissions? No, we don't. We have the full authority to make the call. Because you don't have the legacy of time. You need to be able to do what you need to do to stabilize the network and keep it running smoothly. If we do have time, then of course we will inform everyone that we need to inform. But if we don't, we do have the authority to make the call.
Okay. And then what other instruments do you use to reduce demand?
We have quite a few instruments. I think this is where the myth comes from, that we go to higher stages of load shedding than what we are proclaiming to do.
Yeah.
So we have, the load shedding is a instrument. It's one of the methods we use to reduce demand. We also have a voluntary scheme whereby we contract certain large industrial customers and we actually pay them to reduce their load. And there's a market that runs on a 24-hour basis, so they bid in how much we can reduce on a daily basis under which hours. So we utilize that. Then we have load curtailment, which is part of the contractual, how we contract our bigger customers, and those have different stages as well. So if you put all of these together as a combination, you will see that we will exceed the 6,000 megawatts.
Yeah.
Because we will report on load reduction, but that is actually the sum of all of the different instruments that we use.
Yeah. So the people that are being paid to reduce their load, how does that work? Like, is it manufacturers? Is it, you know, big?
It's normally large industrial customers that are able to do that. So they will switch off a part of their plant for a specific period. So it depends on their production cycle.
Okay.
And what they can do, and that's where the market comes in, that they bid a day ahead and tell us that this is what we can offer you at this hour of the day. Which we then can have the option to use or not to use.
Yeah. What makes you stay awake at night? A lot of South Africans are now beginning to worry about the potential of a grid collapse. How close are we to that?
We are very far from a grid collapse. The probability of a grid collapse is absolutely minute. It is, of course, possible. It's possible in any country in the world. There has been numerous blackouts throughout the world in history. There's never been one in South Africa. So it's possible, but it is definitely not probable. And I think that's something that we need to emphasize. Also, the different stages of load shedding. The higher the stage of load shedding does not dictate that we're closer to a collapse. So we need to be very clear on that as well. A grid collapse is normally it's a very sudden event. You can't foretell it. There won't be any warning. If something like that happens, it happens fast, and it happens normally as a result of a transmission fault, not a capacity constraint, not about how much generation you have, but a sudden event on the transmission system, which then cascades. And eventually, because of the instability of the network as a result of those cascading faults, you will have generators disconnecting from the network. And that's how you get to the total blackout. But I can give you the assurance that in our system, it's actually designed against that. So we have a lot of barriers that's designed in to the network to prevent us from getting to that ever. All right? So it's from the plant design. We have facilities that can help us to circumvent that. We test these facilities. We have robust plans for in the event, should we ever have one. We test all of that regularly. Our units get certified to do certain functions. I'm not going to get too explicit on that. But the fact of the matter is our system is robust. We have a number of barriers in place. Load shedding itself, higher stages or lower stages, you're not anywhere closer to a blackout if you're in a higher stage than you would be in the lower stage. In fact, you're in extreme control of the network when you are in a load shedding situation, because we control it at a minute by minute basis. And when we do the actual load blocks, when we take load off and put them back as we do during load shedding, you are in full control. So that is not a situation where you would expect a blackout. And a blackout also, just in terms of what causes the transmission faults that can cause its normally extreme weather events, such as unexpected high cold or snow, like we had in Texas about a year or so ago, and where the gas pipelines froze. So that's typically the type of magnitude that you would need for such an event. And like I said, we've never in 100 years had one in South Africa, and I don't foresee it happening anytime soon.
Yeah. So we experience stage 6 and we think, my goodness, this is so severe. How close are we to a stage 8 or a stage 9? Especially given how complex this winter period is going to be.
Well, if you look at our winter plan that we shared the other day, our outlook is that we are foreseeing that we might get to a stage 7 or 8 load shedding this winter. How close? That's not a question that I can give you a straight answer to, because it really depends on what happens on the system on a minute-to-minute basis. How much do we have available? But we do know during the winter period it's extremely tough. We have rising heating needs because we have the cold coming in. We also expect the cold fronts to start rolling in from the Cape now.
Mm-hmm.
In one respect, it helps us because we get more wind generation when that happens.
Yeah.
But still, the point is the demand is rising. We do have significant capacity shortages at the moment, and therefore it is reasonable to expect that it might happen.
Mm-hmm.
But we are doing everything in our power to avoid that as much as we can, and using the instruments to our advantage.
Last question. I want to ask about the case that is in court, and I know the Public Enterprises Minister is appealing that. But just technically speaking, I know as Eskom you have argued in court that it's not possible to exempt certain areas or even hospitals or police stations. It's just technically not possible. Can you just explain to us what is impossible about it? Why is it not possible to exempt like a particular hospital or a police station or a school from load shedding when you are implementing it?
Okay, so there's, first of all, the mechanisms of load shedding. It is a cascading, right? So the actual load shedding happens at a much lower level because that's where your feeders to the end user is. If we had to load shed at a national control level, that means we would switch off cities. So obviously that won't go out, won't work. In terms of exemption, I think the biggest principle we need to understand is if any industry or a specific area or sector of the economy or the healthcare is exempt, that means that whatever they would have been taking up in terms of load has to shift to somebody else. Because if we need to balance the system, and we need to have 6,000 megawatts come off, it has to come off. So if it is not shed by everybody equally,
mm-hmm.
and some does not get shed, it means that someone else is going to take up that burden. So we need to understand that exemption means shifting the burden, right? So that's the first point. Secondly, in terms of the law, these two documents documents that would legislate how load shedding is done. First of all, of course, the ERA, and then you have the document NRS 045-9, which is very much been talked about because we're in the process of revising it. So the point is that both of those documents clearly state that load shedding has to be done on equitable terms. So legally, Eskom does not have the right to exempt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of our licensing or any utility's licensing conditions to do load shedding and to do it as per those legal requirements. So they must, if there's any load shedding process, it has to be developed. And it would typically come from NERSA, not from us.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the first part. Technically, why it is not possible is because you typically have a number of customers on one feeder. Now, to make it easy, one wire feeding a number of customers. You think of a house. You'll have one supply to the street, and then tapping off that, you'll have the different houses. Now, you would typically have the interruption at the end of the street, and therefore you have a whole block turned off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have a hospital, because you use that as the example, that is embedded in a urban area, It then means that there's typically a number of industries, houses, businesses around that hospital and feeding off the same feeder. So if you were to exempt, you would have to have a single feeder that you can switch on and off to be able to not switch off that circuit. Mm. But if there's a number of industries or a number of customers on the same circuit, you cannot exempt all of them just because you have a health facility or one of the critical services on there. So it is technically not possible where it's embedded. However, it can be made technically possible. It will take a lot of money and infrastructure to be built to do that.
All right. Isabel Fick, Eskom's General Manager for System Operator in the Transmission Division. Thank you.
Thank you.